listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio with Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging and Michelle Lewis from Northwest Senior and Disability Services. The three of us are here every month for you on the show talking about senior services. So hi to both of you.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. Every month we talk about a topic related to senior health or welfare or various issues around senior well-being. And our topic this month is in-home health caregivers. So if you have an elderly relative or you are an older person yourself, you may be looking at needing help to do things that you maybe once did on your own. This is a show about how do you get that help for your family member or for yourself? How do you go about essentially being an employer and hiring those people into your home? So why don't we start and talk about that? Michelle, where do we start here?
Okay, well, maybe the importance of finding a good home care worker, somebody to help you out at home or with your personal care. It's like center to staying independent in your home. And that's most people that we talk to, that's what they want. They want to be able to stay in their home and stay there as long as possible. So part of that equation may be, well, how do I get help for the things I can't do? And hiring somebody to do that would be obviously one way that you want to go. There's a couple ways of hiring people. You can hire them through an agency, or you can hire them as an employer yourself. So an agency would be the employer, and you would be hiring the agency as a kind of a contract agency to find you somebody to do those tasks. Or you could hire yourself. You can, we have lists available in both Oregon and Washington. Sometimes you'll find people advertising to be home care workers, friends. People do it all different ways. Hiring my neighbor's grandchild. Well, there's pros and cons of that, but people do it all the time, but you should know the pros and cons before you go do that. And then how do you set yourself up as an employer?
Okay. So is there, Doug, do you want to say anything about that? Just to clarify for people, in case you just tuned into the show, maybe you've never heard it before, Doug and Michelle represent services on both sides of the Columbia River. Here in Astoria, we have Washington and Oregon in our listening area. And so Michelle talks about Oregon services, Doug talks about Washington services. So people are really trying to do the same kinds of things on both sides of the river here, right? They're looking
right,
for help.
Right, and it's the same thing. I mean, it runs the whole spectrum from, like Michelle said, agencies, home care agencies that are out there. Some of them are contracted with the state. Some of them they're all licensed if they're going to be providing care and all of that. Then there are the individual providers or independent providers, they're called. There's a registry both in Oregon and Washington for those. In Washington, it's only for Medicaid clients, but in Oregon, it's for both.
Yes.
And then there's the, like she said, I think I'll go hire somebody. And there's a lot of cautions about doing that, about putting ads in the paper, what you should and should not say, about if it's a close personal friend, neighbor, relative. Is that going to cause some dynamics? There's a lot of different things. The biggest thing is, Michelle and I were talking about before the program, is if you're going to hire an independent provider, you need to really get it in your head that you're the employer and that that's your employee. Even if they're independently contracted, so they're saving their own taxes and all that kind of stuff, it's still that relationship. And sometimes those lines can get really blurred and it can end up in a mess. Sometimes it works perfectly, but you have to think that you're the employer.
Well, so let's start with the so there's kind of two pieces here, maybe more, but we'll start with the big picture is that you're hiring somebody yourself or you're going through an agency. Let's start with the idea of hiring someone yourself. So you have maybe an older relative, let's say, who needs some help with things. Where do you start, Michelle?
Okay, so as Doug was saying, being an employer, you are an employer. So if you kind of put yourself into the seat of an employer, you don't want to just hire somebody to come over and help you. And I just need some help. Come over and do something for me. You have a reason why you want to hire that person. And so defining that reason, if an employer goes out to spend money on an employee, they know exactly what they need done. So they develop a task list and a job description of what you want that person to do for you. And break it down exact. You know, if you're going to wash dishes, how many times are you going to wash dishes? If you're going to clean the floor, how often does that need to happen? If you're going to go do laundry, how often do I need laundry done? Really break it down as finite as you can so that you know exactly how many hours that might take a person to do and what that is worth to you as far as the money that you're going to spend. And that also helps you figure out what kind of person you need. Who are you asking to come over? Is it somebody who's got a lot of housekeeping experience, or do they need personal care? Do they need to help you in and out of the shower? Do they need to know how to cook? What is it you're asking for? And if you have that, you really can't move forward. You need to know what it is. And then when you're interviewing somebody, you need to be able to describe that to them and give them something that you're, so they can see what it is. Sometimes that looks like a task list that's on your wall if you've got somebody that you've hired to go through that. So that's the first place to start, job description. What is it that you're going to hire and how much of it?
So how do you go about finding out, maybe Doug, I can ask you this question, you know, what kind of experience a person has had or whether they're really up to the task of what you're asking them to do?
Well, again, it's the employer mindset. You're going to have an interview. And as Michelle said, once you have all the task outlined and you know what you're looking for, if someone comes in and says, well, I just wanted to try it because I've never done it before, well, that's probably not the best pick that you have there. So during the interview, you need to have a list of questions that you're asking each person. You know, do you have experience in dealing with people with whatever's going on in the home? Someone who had a stroke, someone who has maybe early stage Alzheimer's. Have you done personal care for people in the past? Have you come in and worked on a regular schedule and worked on your own without supervision? You know, those type of questions. And anything you can think of is fair to ask. There's also, you need to ask, okay, you've said you've done this before. Could I have a couple of references so I can talk to them to make sure that everything went well, da-da-da-da-da-da. I mean, if you were going to any other kind of job, you'd have to have references, and you know that they'd be checked on. So you have to kind of stay in that mindset. A big one is, though, I mean, it is pretty subjective, too. If you know someone that, during the interview, it looks like they're really good. They know how to keep house. They've done personal care. Maybe they took care of their own parents for years, whatever it may be. Then you have to start looking at the subjective stuff. Is this somebody that mom or dad would get along with? Is this someone who's going to bust in the door and go, I'm here, here's what's happening, you're going to take your bath now, here's your mitt, you know. Is it somebody that can kind of schmooze people into doing things? Is there going to be that blend of personalities? And also just, you know, you really need to know that the person you're hiring is trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
Background checks are available. You can do background checks on them. Of course, that only counts if they're caught doing something wrong. But you can do background checks. And also the references is another good check on that. Because you're going to have someone in your home. You're not going to be probably with them 24/7 because you have a caregiver in so you can go do what you need to do. So all of those things are considerations to look at.
Yeah, I go so far to say never hire anybody without doing that reference check.
Right.
And that can be kind of an uncomfortable thing for somebody to do who's never done that. And so, preparing yourself with some questions to ask the person you're calling about the reference and consistently ask the same questions to the same to all of the people that you have interviewed for.
Yeah, that kind of brings me to the pamphlet. I'll hold it up to the microphone so
everybody
can see it.
Oh, look how nice that is. It's a very nice pamphlet, everyone. It's called How to Hire In-Home Help, and it actually is really cool. I mean, I love pamphlets. I'm a pamphlet person. So, I have a pamphlet I can read, but it really is lots of great information.
It does. It has a sample contract in there that you can do with the caregiver. It has a background check form that you can fill out and submit to the Washington State Patrol. It also has several interview questions and then also a list of questions of what to ask the references. So it kind of lays it all out. It even talks about the tax thing, if you're paying them yourself or if that person is considering themselves an independent contractor where they pay their own taxes. So there's all those kinds of things, plus hints about, you know, if you have valuables loose around the house, you might want to lock those away. And just those type of things. But it's very informative and asks some questions, or some questions are in the book that probably if I was in the situation, I wouldn't think to ask because I'm just trying to get help. You know, it's kind of a pressure cooker for me. So it's a very good booklet. It's free at our agency. And when we give the contact information, they can call us and we can mail it to them or they can come by the office or whatever.
Yeah, it's a 23-page booklet, so it's got a lot of information in it. And I think it looks like it would really help guide you through this? Because, you know, a lot of people have no experience at all with hiring someone. That's just not in their range of life experience. So I have a question. Maybe, Doug, I can start with you. What do you have any sense of what percentage of people out there, of the people that you serve in the Olympic Area Agency on Aging, are hiring their own caregivers as opposed to going through an agency?
Don't really have statistics on that, because chances are they haven't contacted us. They've just gone ahead and done it. Generally, when someone does contact us and say, hey, we're looking for, this is what we're looking for, we kind of go through all the different options they have. Personally, I usually recommend, if they can afford it, to go through an agency. The background checks are done, the trainings are done, everything's in place. If that caregiver can't make it, a substitute one can come in. So there's all those advantages. Or they can go, if they're on Medicaid, they can go through the registry, which is another thing that has background checks and all of that stuff and contracts. Hiring on their own, then we get into the discussion of the booklet and be careful who you hire, be careful how you place the ad. But chances are, I would say it's probably a small percentage that just go out and sort of do it on their own, unless it's a friend that they're just hiring.
Okay.
There's also the whole piece of what happens if that worker gets injured when they're at your home. So, you know, is that workman's comp? Is that your home insurance? You need to know what that is in case something happens when that person is doing something for you.
And so then would people have to look at their home insurance policy and see if it covers that kind of thing? It wouldn't automatically necessarily cover it.
Definitely would want to check with that. And that's another advantage of going through the contract agencies, is that's not an issue then, because they carry their own insurance.
Well, before we get into other things, I just want to remind people that you're listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout, and I'm here in the studio with Michelle Lewis from Northwest Senior and Disability Services, which covers Oregon Senior Services, and Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging, which is Washington State. And every month we come to you with this show called A Senior Moment and talk about senior issues. And today we're talking about in-home help for your elder or for yourself. When people get to the point in life where they just need a hand with some things around the house, everything from just picking things up and to getting help with bathroom chores or in and out of bed or in and out of the shower, there's sort of an escalating situation depending on how healthy and independent people are. But this is a way for people to do something that we talk about a lot on the show, which is there's a real focus in the senior industry to keep people in their homes as long as possible and independent. And this is a way to keep people living in their own homes, which most people would rather do. So let's talk a little bit about the registry and what that is and how somebody could access it.
Okay.
So, Michelle, why don't you start?
Yeah, the best way to access is call our number, and we can help you do that. In Oregon, the registry was set up for Medicaid clients or Oregon Project Independent. So if the state's paying for the home care worker, it was originally set up for that. It's moving toward being more available for private. It's available anyway for private people if they want it, but the marketing piece of it is moving toward being available for private folks. And so we're glad to share that information. It involves getting, the best way is to learn how to get your kid or yourself onto the computer, and it'll ask for your preferences, what kind of care you need, how often you need it, do you have transportation, do you need to be on a bus line, do you need shopping done. It'll ask you all the different kind of personal care that you might need, and then it'll sort through the caregiver side and find those caregivers that said they can do that or be available during those times. And so then you'll get this nice list of caregivers in your area that you could start calling and talking to. But before you do that, I got to go back to the task list. You know, you've got to make sure you know why you're hiring. And so before you start making those phone calls, know what you're hiring for, what jobs you want done, what your expectations are of the person, what kind of person you want to have come in your home. Have some interview questions ready. And do you want to interview them on the phone? Do you want them all to come to your house? Are you going to have an application for them to fill out? So think of those things ahead of time before you start making those phone calls, so that you're ready when you start talking to them.
So, Doug, you were saying that the registry in Washington. Just talk a little bit about that, because it is a little bit different from Oregon.
It is. It's a home care referral registry, but it's only for Medicaid clients. And that's where if someone is on Medicaid services and they've lost a caregiver or they want a different caregiver, then our registry people go in and find the matches, you know. Because there'll be preferences in there, like if they're smoking, does that bother you? Do big dogs worry you? You know, all those type of different issues. Do parrots flying around the house bother you? You know, and if people are going, yeah, I don't want to deal with that, then they find someone else, or they say, yeah, I can make that work. So it's kind of a mix and match. We have the client come on the registry, get all their preferences, and then the caregivers, when they come on the registry, we get all their preferences, and we match that way.
So I want to talk a little bit about sort of the problems that could come up with this kind of thing, because it seems kind of fraught with issues, maybe. I mean, you could end up with somebody really great, and I'm sure people do, but if things don't go well, I think what would probably deter people from doing this is not knowing how to handle it if mm-hmm. something went wrong. So, you know, what if, I mean, for one thing, maybe Doug, can you talk a little bit about how do you go about managing a person that's in your home when you're not there? Or in someone's home, how do people assess what's going well and what's not? I mean, you can look at what gets accomplished, but what about some of those other things like?
Well, that's one of the reasons that we were talking about the contract, is you're going to do these tasks and you're going to do them within this schedule. And something that Michelle brought up earlier was about having a log in the home. So especially if you have more than one caregiver. Now, if you've got somebody that requires a lot of care, I strongly recommend don't hire somebody for 7 days a week, you know, one person. So if you have a couple, that logbook really comes in. You can say, you know, I gave Mr. Jones his medicines at da-da-da-da-da-da. Then the next caregiver comes in and says, okay, I don't have to do that. This is done, but now I have to prepare dinner, you know, that kind of stuff. So there's that type of management. You know, it isn't the blissful world where you say, okay, I've hired him and I've done the interview and the background check and everything's good. I don't have to show up anymore. Yeah, it's not going to happen. And so, you know, it's go and do the things you need to do. I recommend, just like you would do at a facility, for example, pop back in, you know, and just see how things are going. Check the schedule. Do a lot of sort of debriefing with your caregiver. How did things go today? What was this about? Did this da 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 da? And you know, that's kind of taking care of the personal care end of it. The other thing, again, that we talked about earlier is one thing that you need to sort of manage is your own stuff. So if you've got some valuable things, and not saying that the caregiver's, you know, a thief, but why put temptation, you know, in the way? So if you've got some expensive jewelry, that kind of stuff, keep it locked away. Meds, keep them locked away until they're needed. Those type of things. If you've got something that you really don't want anybody to touch, mess with, do anything else, put it in a room that they aren't going to be working in, you know, and keep it away. So there's all those different things. And then there's the problem with that is the boundaries that get crossed as you relate to your caregiver, and pretty soon the caregiver is calling you grandma or grandpa, and, oh, I want you to have these diamond rings that were my, you know, and the kids are going, what? So, you know, those type of things. So you always have to keep your hand in. You always have to make sure things are being done. And, again, it's the employer and the employee. You know, my boss doesn't say, okay, there's your check. I'll see you in a couple months. Let me know if anything comes up. You know, we're back and forth all the time. So it's that type of mindset you have to keep in place. It may be that they become a friend of the family, but they're still an employee.
So somebody really has to be willing to sort of take on that management role with a capital M if they're going to do this in an independent way.
Quite often the person who needs the help isn't the person to do that. But sometimes they are. Sometimes they're the ones in charge. But those boundaries are extremely important that Doug was talking about. In my job, I'm not allowed to take gifts. I mean, it's spelled out in my job policies. No, I'm not allowed to take any gifts. And so I think those kind of, what are your house rules? What are the rules to begin with? And those can be spelled out right in the very start. What are the rules? I'm expected to come to work on time. So, you know, again, the home care worker is expected to come to work on time. Well, that's great, but what happens if they're 15 minutes late? Do they call 15 minutes? Do they call a half hour? Do they need to call 24 hours in advance? What are your rules? And so you need to think about those things. Do they eat lunch? Do they take a lunch period? Do they take a break period? Do they need to bring their own lunch? Do they bring their own drinks? Are you going to provide that? Those are all things that you need to think about before you hire that person, and really stick by those boundaries. And thinking about boundaries, sometimes it's not just to protect the person that's hiring, and their stuff. You're protecting that person that you're hiring, because, for instance, if if mom gave that diamond ring to the caregiver, for instance, they have a right to do that as an adult, to give away things. But if there's some dementia involved, then that becomes another story. If by right, though, they gave them that diamond ring and the kids start fussing about it, then they've got this big issue going on that could have been resolved in the beginning by simple rule. We're not going to give. This is a job. We're not going to give gifts. If something comes up missing and you've misplaced it and you've then had to tell your, you know, accuse your home care worker of stealing it, then you're in a really bad situation. You put that person in a bad situation. So now they're carrying that potential guilt, and as they go on to find another job, you aren't going to give them, it gets really messy. You're not going to give them a good reference. It gets really, really messy. So you don't want that mess. And you do that by setting out your boundaries, setting out your rules in the beginning, and following through with those rules all the way through, and keeping good time logs. A calendar with time that you came in, time you came out. What are you going to do about a timesheet? Are they going to sign something? If they're on a Medicaid program or state program, yes, they've got to sign something, and both parties are required to be accurate. But that can get messy real fast if you're not sticking by the rules and putting in time in, time out. If you're retiring privately, very important still. 15 minutes every day being late or leaving early can really add up when you're paying $20, $25 an hour for somebody. So you've got a job that needs to be done. You want it done right, and you want to be fair with everybody.
So if you come to the point where you need to fire someone, you know, in a workplace, say most workplaces, there are rules about how you fire people. I mean, you sort of have to give people warning and put them on an improvement plan and do all this stuff. And so does that apply here? Doug, can I, or Michelle, either one of you?
Not really. I mean, you can fire somebody
fire
whenever
will,
you want
of.
To. Sure, okay. Sure. But you want to think a little bit about it too, and that why are you firing the person? Have you tried to resolve the issue before you go just fire him because you're mad that day? Have you done any corrective actions? Does the person, be fair with the person? Do they know what the expectation was? Were you clear in your communication? And then if you need to take that action and fire somebody, perfectly legitimate to do that. Under any circumstance, you can ask them not to come back to the job, but you want to make sure that you've been fair about it just because it makes sense. And again, that person may be trying to create a career for themselves, so you want to make sure that they're growing in that path too.
So how would you, Doug, let me ask you this one. How would you decide when you need to involve the police? I mean, I know some things are emergencies, but...
Well, and any legal thing, you know, if it's pretty obvious that the shopping money is disappearing, but no food's coming in, and that's kind of, you know, not a one-time thing. But I mean, if you're seeing actual theft going on and you're really convinced that it certainly call law enforcement. Another option is adult protective services. If it seems like, say I come and visit dad and he's been managing this guy, but, you know, dad seems like his money management went south or something, and or maybe he's just seems a little like high anxiety. In questioning if there's any doubt about financial exploitation or verbal abuse or any of that kind of stuff, adult protective services can get involved. They don't have to be a state client for them to look into it. And then if there's crimes involved there too, the police get involved with them. So family members is another thing. You know, I really want to sort of underscore what Michelle said. Just because something's missing one time or something didn't go the way you like it and boom, you're fired, get out of here, you're never give you a reference. If you've got a family member that can also kind of get involved and sort those things out, that's really good. But just because you've hired someone and invited them into your home doesn't mean you've given up all your rights as an individual. So absolutely, the police, adult protective services, people can call our offices, you know, even though they've done all this and we don't even know what's going on because they're doing it on their own. We still advocate for seniors. So they can call our offices and we can help sort through that stuff and see what's going on.
And one of the stories I hear over and over again is the home care worker has come in and taken over. You know, they're going to do everything the way they want to do it. And suddenly the person loses control of their environment. And that, again, can be avoided by those earlier boundaries, by putting out this is the person who's in charge. it'll be myself, it'll be my daughter that's going to come over, and we're going to make sure they stay in charge by taking control of the situation in the beginning. And to know that you always have the right to do that, that you always have the right to take control. It is you're paying the money out for the position. You are the one in charge. And how you want it done is how it should be done. So if you want laundry done a certain way, you have the right to say that's the way it's going to be done. As in any job, you know, I do what my employer tells me to do because that's the expectations. You start off with that expectation. This is a job. This is how I want it done. And you have to stay in control of that. The person in hiring somebody like that is put in kind of a very vulnerable situation because they feel like their independence is at risk. If they lose their home care worker, they might have to go to a facility, for instance, and they're afraid of losing that. And so it can get skewed really fast. And so taking that control and making sure if you can't do it, a family member is in control is very important.
It's also the sometimes our pride, not that any of us ever have pride, but sometimes our pride or ego gets in the way that in an example, one I can think of was dad, for example. He's hired somebody and he's done it. He's independent. He's done all this stuff and it's really not working out. And he doesn't want to say anything to the family or to anybody because maybe they said, well, you know, maybe you should get an agency worker. No, I know, and I'm going to do that. Well, it starts going south, then it's a little embarrassing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's, like Michelle said, if they're gone, am I going to a facility? Well, no, of course not. There's other options for caregivers. But it becomes, I made this decision, and now I'm embarrassed. People are going to think I'm just a stupid old guy or whatever. And so that becomes, they become very hesitant to say, yeah, this isn't working, I need something else. So another reason to reach out for advocacy and family members and so on.
And that's something our agencies can do, too. We mm-hmm. can help clarify the situation with them and help problem solve. Certainly can do that.
So when we're getting toward the end of the show, but I wanted to just talk a little bit about cost. You mentioned it's like $20, $25. What's the difference between the cost in a private agency versus hiring yourself? Maybe, Doug, can I ask you that? Is it the same?
I never remember what the rate is for a caregiver agency. It's
ours are 18 to 25.
It's 20, I see. Yeah, ours is mid-20s. I think it's like 23, something like that. But again, you're paying for, you know, the administrative costs. Like Michelle said, they're covering the liability insurance,
okay.
Their training, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But a lot of people see that, especially, say, the generation previous to ours, and they're thinking, what, $23? Are you kidding me? I can hire somebody for $9 an hour. Well, yeah, you might get
what
you pay for.
Yeah. So then if you were hiring independently, would you then have to handle things like payroll taxes and Social Security and all that through those checks,
it
like
depends.
We would do here as an employer?
It depends if you're hiring them and you're the employer and it's more than $1,000 a year, there are some tax considerations. If that person is an individual contractor, then they take care of their own taxes. And that's another thing to get very clear when you're starting. Are you going to be taking out your own taxes or am
I? Yeah, and there's some laws around who can be a contractor and who can't be. So it's worth doing some homework if you're going to go that route.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think we're at the point in the show where we do our contact information. So just if you don't remember anything else about what we said, remember this information. Or you can always go online and Google Northwest Senior and Disability Services in Oregon or the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. These folks are just fantastic resources for all this information about things that we've talked about today and other things. So, Michelle.
So it's Northwest Senior and Disability Services, and the phone number is 503-861-4202. And our website is just www.nwsds.org.
Okay, Doug?
Well, for ours, for North Pacific County and the Raymond office is 360-942-2177. And in South County and Long Beach area, it's 360-642-3634. And our website is www.o3a.org.
Great. And so, you know, for people, if you're driving or if you're just in a lot of us, like I do, listen to the radio while you're doing something else, just remember those agencies and give them a call. They'll help you out and steer you in the right direction, no matter what your question is about senior services. Well, you've been listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio, as we are every month, with Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging and Michelle Lewis from Northwest Senior and Disability Services. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next month on A Senior Moment.